welcome, ladies and gentlemen. Thank you for tuning in to another live stream. This is Red Ice TV. Good to have you all with us. It was a while ago since we did a live stream. It was probably, what's that, Lana? Pre-hack.
Jeez, it feels like a month ago now.
It was a while ago, actually. So, everyone, thank you for joining us. Whether you're joining us, of course, in the live stream, as it were, live in the chat, or if you're joining us in the archives later, good to have you all with us. We do have actually a very serious topic here at hand today that we wanted to bring some more attention to and focus on, because there has been a big uproar, of course, lately about YouTube, and this has so far primarily kind of taken its shape in the form of what they call the adpocalypse, right? Some of the biggest YouTubers have basically been, you know, demonetized. There's a lot of things that have happened where they basically can't make income anymore. That was their prime way of making money. That was their job. They had, in some cases, their income slashed by half. So you've seen a lot of uproar on that end of things. And that's a first step in the process. But what we wanted to focus on today is when the next step in the process begins, which is to take, you know, actual censorship against specific videos, against specific topics. It's one thing to have demonetization, which of course can be very negative, but there's another thing basically when we are in a position where we cannot voice our discontent, as it were, with the system as dissidents. We have two guests with us, which I think is very relevant in terms of what has happened both to them and the research that they've done. First out of the gates, Jared Taylor. Good to have you back, Jared. Thank you for coming on.
Oh, it's a pleasure. Thanks for inviting me.
Excellent. And we also have James Alsup. Thank you for coming on, James.
Always a pleasure. Thanks.
So, guys, let's kick off here and kind of dive into this here a little bit. And one of the things, Jared, I think would be good to speak with you about, and the reasons for this is because one of your videos have been specifically singled out, and I believe it's the first one of the kind that this has happened to. It's been, as they say, quarantined, right? It has basically been completely locked out. There is no related videos anymore. You can't see any views. You can't do thumbs up and down. There's several layers of warnings, basically, before you can come in and see the video. And this, Jared, correct me if I'm wrong, but this is not the main American Renaissance YouTube channel. This is the New Century Foundation. Is that correct?
Well, that video has an interesting history. When we first put it up, it was from the American Renaissance. It was part of our channel. It was up for a while, and then it was completely taken down. It was worse than quarantine. It disappeared entirely. And so we did a little bit of a trick, and we modified it ever so slightly and put it up on a different channel. And so it stayed up on that different channel for about 2 years and accumulated over 200,000 views. And then just as soon as YouTube announced this new system of what I have called quarantining, in which, as you say, they cast a video out into the outer darkness, there's no way to get to it through searching Google or through searching any kind of internal portion of YouTube. The only way to get to it is if there is a direct link to it in another website. And as you say, you can't comment on it, you can't thumbs up or thumbs down, and it's never recommended as a follow-up to any other YouTube video. So this happened almost immediately after they announced that policy. Now, I'm aware of a number of other videos on the same subject, as a matter of fact, race and IQ, that were treated in that way. But I was fortunate, American Renaissance was fortunate in that the fact of this quarantining attracted a fair amount of attention. Even Julian Assange, of all people, tweeted about it and complained about this happening.
That's right.
And so in just the first few days after the quarantining, because people were sending the link to get to the video, we had an additional 70,000 views. But after this, ever since this initial furor has died down, then we just hardly get any views at all. Because once a video is treated in this way, it's essentially unavailable to the general public.
So did you get any notification? Because this was the problem with the adpocalypse. It was basically a set of rules that all of a sudden started to change. No one had been forewarned. YouTube just decided to do these things. In many cases, I think it seems to be algorithms that basically runs in the back end. That is preventing people from, you know, monetizing their video, basically. But in this case, this seems manually done, if I can put it that way. Someone has gone in, manually looked at the video and deemed it, you know, let's quarantine this. But were you notified in any regard of this?
We were simply told this is happening. And we were also told, if you wish to dispute our decision, send us an email message, which of course we did. And they said, well, sorry, we're going to stick to our decision. And that's the end of the appeal process. And they give no real reason for this. They say, we just don't like the video and that's it. But no, we got no warning. We just were told it's in the outer darkness now.
Very interesting. So this is, of course, a premonition, I think, of what is to come. It's interesting that they chose, you know, this topic also, Jared. I mean, it's very, very pertinent, I think, to where YouTube and Google and these big companies are at politically. And they have certainly revealed themselves with their lefty bias, if you will. And they just don't tolerate differing opinions or dissidents here.
Well, the disturbing thing about this video is that it didn't really express opinion much at all. It was a very sober survey of the scientific evidence for the view that there is at least a significant genetic contribution to average IQ differences from one race to the next. And it was very straightforward about presenting the evidence that East Asians probably have higher IQs than Caucasians. And it was simply an account with charts and graphs and numbers suggesting that this is what the scientific evidence produced. It should lead us to conclude. There was nothing vituperative, nothing emotional, nothing that could be remotely described as hate, for heaven's sake. And so I was particularly struck that they would take basically a scientific presentation of data that is widely available. And simply having it all in one place, expressed in the way I expressed it, was unacceptable to them. This is really quite terrifying, if you ask me.
Interesting. Yeah, because that seems to be the case. I mean, certainly then, if, you know, people who are not on our side politically, so to speak, they, of course, might be perfectly okay with this kind of content being censored and everything else. And this is, of course, a classic right. point that we have to continue to bring up, that where is YouTube going to draw the line? If this is not an explicit hate video, so to speak, whatever we should dub it, then at what point does other scientific work overall begin to be censored? I mean, where do we draw the line, right?
That's exactly right. And many people have drawn conclusions of this kind on our side. Of course, the left is perfectly happy to see opinions with which they disagree being censored. There is an occasional voice of consistency on the left pointing out that, well, hold on, the tables could be turned and our views can be censored too. But you can count on the fingers of one hand the number of liberals who have actually taken a principled view on this. And to me, there is a parallel to the YouTube approach to this and the university approach, which is, for example, if you have someone like Charles Murray, who is invited to speak about a subject that has nothing to do with race and IQ, the fact that he has taken a position on that subject makes him illegitimate, and his invitation will either be withdrawn or his presentation will be shouted down. He'll be silenced. The same thing's happened with James Watson, the co-inventor or the co-discoverer of the double helix, the DNA structure, probably the most esteemed, most eminent living scientist in the world right now. He was invited to give a talk at a university, and later people complained about the fact that he had made a few informal musings about race differences in IQ, and that fact alone was enough to have his invitation rescinded as well. So the idea that there can be any legitimate scientific evidence for racial differences in IQ being at least partially due to genetic differences, these are facts, ideas, interpretations that are simply not to be presented to the American public.
Yeah,
it's really an astonishing state of affairs.
This is to be scrubbed off the internet, and these platforms do not welcome it. This is very interesting. Now, I do want to kind of run down this, if you will, point by point almost. There's a lot of things in this which I think we should tie in. Why is this happening? Why now? What's it going to lead to? What do we do to fight back, etc.? But James, I just want to pull you into the conversation here as well. And what was your initial math? I believe you made a good video about this, kind of outlining these issues. And you were familiar with what they call the adpocalypse as well. But what was your initial reaction when you saw what happened to Jared's video and others that consequently got their videos taken down and channels taken down?
Well, I knew that this would not be the end of it. They were not just going to use this power and this newly crafted authority to censor this one iteration of wrongthink. This was going to be the new trend and the new modus operandi for how YouTube works. And we've seen that now is how they are doing things. You mentioned the adpocalypse. You know, I have entirely given up, and many other YouTubers have entirely given up on counting on any sort of revenue from advertisements, because it just simply isn't tenable anymore. You can do a video where you, like Jared was mentioning, you don't really inject any opinion at all into something. You just talk about facts and history, for example, and that will be demonetized and censored, and they will use the algorithmic pressure to prevent people from seeing that. It is interesting to note, of course, that while they are censoring and trying to prevent people from seeing videos like the one Jared made, they are completely okay with allowing videos of comedians, many of them African-American, specifically a video from a black comedian named Akilah Hughes, where she says that she can't wait for the future of America where there are fewer white people, and she can't wait for an America. She can't wait for an America without white people. That's okay to say on the website, and that, in fact, that earns ad revenue. But if you dare mention, you know, the IQ differentials, you are in thought crime prison, so to speak. They've definitely been ratcheting this up. There was a story, they actually disclosed this after the Las Vegas shooting, where they came out and they said, you know, we are going to adjust our algorithms to encourage reputable information and reputable sources to rise to the top and discourage the alternative or conspiracy sources from coming to the top of the algorithm or top of these Google searches, YouTube searches. And so if you think about that, that on its face sounds like an okay idea. We're going to get reputable sources, right? But then we have to remember who is deciding the reputability, who is analyzing these sources for their reputability and their veracity. Well, it's, of course, leftists who run YouTube and Google. So they're promoting sources like ABC News, NBC News, more of these mainstream sources, and actively suppressing anything that is coming from the more alternative media. And this will only get worse. I mean, there's no sign of them stopping
this. So there is the issue, of course, of interpretation, right? Of what does these things mean? Like a partial nudity, for example, could be one of the things which flagged your video from being demonetized, right? And so there is a definition issue. How far do you guys think we can get on the? I mean, this is specifically about the ad, you know, the revenue issue of it, of course. But I think this extends to those videos that are going to be completely censored or quarantined in the sake of as in Jared's video here, basically. But how? Is it, do you guys think that we're ever going to get straight answers out of YouTube so we know what the deal is and so we know what the parameters are so that we won't be censored and taken down? Is it worth fight taking, guys?
I think the chances of their coming up with any kind of clear line of demarcation are close to zero. It's impossible, really, to come up with a definition that excludes a video like mine from being fit for consumption in a way that permits others that might deal with the same facts. Charles Murray, for example, if he made a video, probably he would not be taken down because he's a respectable guy. He's got an academic position. I think they'd have a very, very difficult time taking him off of YouTube. So it becomes very much a subjective thing. And I don't know whether it was bots or some sort of algorithm that resulted in our video being gone, or whether somebody actually watched it. I just don't know. But I think there's just no way. It's like defining pornography. At what point is it really pornography? And for them to say, okay, if you say X in very specific terms, then that's wrong. Well, you can come up with X prime that is saying almost exactly the same thing, but not in those specific terms. Now, are they going to then be held to the original definition and not ban that? No, there is no clear way of doing it. And I think it's impossible for them to come up with lines of that kind.
Yeah.
Well, they even say, actually, under their terms here, under hate speech, they say there's a fine line between what is and what is not considered to be hate speech. a fine line that they decide what that is, right?
Of course.
Well, but that just means it's a subjective thing, an utterly subjective thing. And this smells bad. Yeah.
That's all that really means.
Sorry, Reinhard, go ahead. You're welcome, by the way. Thank you for joining us a bit later. Go ahead, Reinhard.
Thank you. Yeah, I was just going to say it means they get to make the decision. You know, that's one of the joys of having power is you get to discern the ways and the circumstances in which you wield that power. So, you know, when I saw that they more or less only really targeted Jared's video with this particular instance, it really made me feel that they were testing the waters, that they were seeing, you know, what can we get away with here? The fact that they went after Jared's video and not every video that focuses on similar themes, you know, human biodiversity, IQ differences and so forth, really tells me that they're just trying to, you know, like I said, test the waters, see what they can get away with. I think they would like to censor all of the content like this, but they're not in a rush to do so. They don't want to be too brazen. They have to at least give off the pretense or the air of being, apolitical and nonpartisan.
And in their mind, they already have set up an objective standard because to really, when you think about this and you get inside the mind of someone who is on the left like this, hate is an objective thing to them. They think that anything that talks about race, any white person talking about race is hate. That is bigotry. That is hate speech. And so we are in a position where when we talk about these things, regardless of what we're saying, it will be perceived as hate and as hatred and as hateful. And Yeah. It fits in their definition of things to be banned.
Right. Just exploring certain ideas from the wrong perspective. Because obviously you can talk about IQ and race and all of that from a left-wing perspective, which really amounts to white people are evil and IQ is a social construct and whatever else. But yeah, if you start having the wrong opinions on these taboo ideas, then that's when the issue arises.
The idea of being able to come up with a clear demarcation of what is or is not offensive or hate, the difficulty of that is clear where in Europe you have laws that forbid hate speech, and they try to define them in reasonably clear ways, but there's just no way that makes it entirely crystal clear. There can be extreme cases that are clearly on one side of the law and extreme cases that are on the other side of the law, but to come up with some kind of real definition that is applicable to every single case is just impossible. So right. No, there will never be a YouTube explanation that or definition that is satisfactory.
Yeah. Sorry, go ahead. Jump in there, Reinhardt.
Sorry not to interrupt, but yeah, and I think a good point on top of what Jared was saying is that I don't think they really want it to be completely objective. Because again, this is a lot of power in the hands of people who do have a certain political agenda, do lean left of center. So do they really want to create a rigid set of rules to which they are forced to adhere? I think they want to have a bit of leeway, because that's the whole thing about hate speech, is that hate speech legislation or rules in the case of YouTube, it gives power to the people who are able to determine it. So yeah, they do want there to be a bit of ambiguity from which they can wield power.
Yeah, it's a good point. What I wanted to mention as well is obviously what might be some of the driving forces behind this, because we did get a couple of articles. This is back in August, basically, where we did have indications of a teaming up, if you will, between organizations such as the ADL, basically becoming a first-hand advisor, it seems like, to Google, to YouTube, to determine what they consider to be hate and what is unacceptable, so forth. And so this is kind of no surprise that they're going after, I guess, more right-wing ideas, conservative even ideas.
Are you saying the ADL has a bias?
Well, of course. Oh my God,
that's shocking.
Of course they do. Who expects them to be objective, right? This we can understand, guys, obviously. But what I'm saying is that we just need to kind of expose the clear political motive behind this, that this is not for accuracy. I don't even think that they see themselves as saying, well, we're going to stop terrorism. We saw what happened in Charlottesville. A person died. That's basically terrorism. So the alt-right is responsible for these things. So it's our objective to save lives. I think it's just completely political at this point. They just don't like these opinions.
Let me give you an interesting example of that. Amazon has a program for nonprofit organizations, and there are certain benefits to registering as a nonprofit, and then people can make purchases through your portal, etc. And there are other advantages as well. Now, we applied for that, and they turned us down. And I said, well, what's going on here? Why is it we are a nonprofit? And this is open to all nonprofits, as far as I can tell. They said, well, it's open to all nonprofits except for nonprofits designated by the Southern Poverty Law Center as hateful. So they are explicit about the fact that they go to the SPLC to make a determination as to which nonprofits are legitimate and which are not.
Yep, pretty clear.
Yeah, very clear.
So how far, guys, do you think that we can get when it comes to pushing them to basically backtrack and basically push them up against the wall and say, listen, you're clearly biased. You're such a big outlet at this point that you become a de facto a controller of the flow of information. In other words, I mean, YouTube could, I guess, reasonably be seen as a utility that helped to make people come up with choices in elections, right? Things like this, that it offers so many different opinions that it's a service that is essential to society itself to keep citizens informed. Is this anything that we legally could pursue?
Well, I would also say that it has become like a workplace for people. People make money there, right? It is almost like a job site. So you could argue discrimination on the job site, right? I mean, I'd like to see a precedent for this in court. I know PragerU is suing Google over censorship, so I'd be curious to know where that goes. But us going to court and actually arguing their terms and saying what is hate would probably be the best thing that could happen for us if we can make it a huge public ordeal.
Well, I think that there are certain limitations with that, again, because YouTube has the First Amendment right of free association, and there is no statutory limitation on discrimination based on political viewpoint. It's not part of the 1964 CRA, Civil Rights Act. Now, there's an argument being made by a lot of people that it should be, that if we're going to have these non-discrimination laws, then we might as well include the political viewpoint as something that can't be discriminated against. That's something that, is to the ire of many people who are more small government libertarians, but as a matter of tactics, it may be something worth looking into. Now, I think that there is a lot of reason for optimism, and we see this coming from a lot of the big YouTube channels and the bigger YouTube stars and personalities. Even they are coming out and saying this is ridiculous. People like Philip DeFranco, people like Casey Neistat. These are not people that we know, but these are people that have tens of millions of subscribers and followers who listen to what they say. And even people like that are coming out and saying this has gotten out of control. This has gone way too far, and it's discriminating against and affecting people who should not be affected by this. So I think there is an opportunity for the YouTube user base to recognize what's going on and voice their frustrations with YouTube. Now, will that have any meaningful effect on YouTube and how they change their policies? That is yet to be seen. But I think that in terms of public consciousness, we can have some reason for optimism.
Yeah, that's a good point, because we've come to a point now, of course, where they're clearly going after dissidents in this way. They don't want information to get out, and I think, gentlemen, that at the core of that is not because of our ideas are wacky and doesn't make sense. I think that we've gained plenty of ground. Lana, you had the sensible article. Show that article again of basically why is the right winning, right? There was an article, I don't know, was it the New York Times? That's a bias.
It's because we have sensible ideas and they're influencing people. The right is dominating YouTube and they have a problem with this. They have to put their lid on this.
This
right
is the
away.
Thing, yeah. Right? They're losing the battle here a little bit, so that they're taking authoritarian measures to clamp down.
They don't
down
like that we're popular. And now they're becoming even paranoid about some of these big YouTubers. I know you just mentioned The Needle Drop, PewDiePie. They're paranoid that some of these guys that have huge influence and are making tons of money might be secretly, covertly on our side. So if you don't come out and just say, I hate white people, I'm a leftist, they want to shut you down. I mean, it's bad enough even just saying, hey, I like white people, Jeez.
There is a certain awareness among some of these tech people, CEOs, of just the illegitimacy of what they're doing. Probably some of you remember what the Cloudflare CEO, Matthew Prince, said about taking Daily Stormer. He wasn't actually capable of taking Daily Stormer off the net, but he withdrew services, very important services, from Daily Stormer. He said, or he had originally said, that we're the plumbers of the internet. We make the pipes work, but it's not right for us to inspect what is or isn't going through the pipes. He went on to say, if companies like ours or internet service providers start censoring, there'd be an uproar. It would lead us down a path of internet censors and controls akin to a country like China.
Yep.
Now, so there is a certain awareness of this slippery slope, but that did not stop this same Matthew Prince guy from deciding, okay, I've had enough. Daily Stormer is beyond the pale. So there is a kind of bad consciousness, I think, among those who are capable of thinking in principle terms, but that number is probably very small, and bad conscience does not prevent them from stepping on us if they think that they're doing the work of the Lord by shutting up so-called hate mongers.
Yeah, and in that instance, the CEO of Cloudflare, I believe he said he woke up one day and he decided that Andrew Anglin was an asshole. It was something along those lines.
That's
he might
right.
have said he
just
he
on
woke
a whim,
up.
Basically. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Right. He woke up in a bad mood and was like, "I'm going to do this." And then he later said, "He said, oh, and that's a bad thing. I shouldn't have this power." Later, he kind of realized what he did and the implications of it.
And he got attacked for that from a lot of movie producers, right, for pirated content. And then they're like, "Oh, yeah, so you can just remove things? Well, why aren't you removing all our movies?"
The ISIS stuff, right? Yeah. That connection. He does actually protect some ISIS websites.
Yeah,
I
of
believe.
Course.
Yeah. It's very interesting to note that these people who are talking about removing hate from the internet, removing there was a great example of them moving to the Onion browser, the deep web, and the developers of the Onion browser said, oh, we will censor the Daily Stormer. And then people are coming out and saying, well, you guys allow child pornography. You guys allow sex slavery and
slave trading. Yeah, they don't get the right to morally signal about this.
Right. And a website that, you know, posts offensive content and jokes is that's the bridge too far for you. Not the drug trading and stuff. It's insane.
It is interesting, though, that we've managed to push it in that direction, right? Where, and this is what I'm talking about, the definitions, because if we can tiptoe around this, we should be able to have them close the news so much that it starts affecting basically everyone, right? Is it a language thing? Is it, you know, when code words and these kinds of things come along, eventually, if it's at least if it's algorithms running, this will have an effect on everybody, right?
Well, I think their hope is to basically choke people out like us financially, choke us out from having any kind of public viewing us to the point where we just give up. We're like, it's just too much work to produce all this. And we have an audience of 10 people and we're not making any money right. to sustain, you know, all our stuff. That's what they hope. That's what they want to happen here. But that's exactly what we can't let happen. That's why we have to group together. We have to be loud about it. We have to get our content out there. We have to bring awareness to these things. We have to really step it up and be loud, right? The squeaky wheel gets the oil.
Well, sure. Henrik, even I think it would be impossible for the algorithms to be so crude that it takes down everybody. It's not that difficult to target people who are promoting an explicit racial consciousness, who talk about the genetic contribution to IQ differences. I don't think that's difficult. What they will do is target what is, in internet terms, really a tiny, tiny sector. I mean, we are putting out material that is just a drop in this enormous ocean of internet content. So by taking out what is just one drop in the ocean, they are in effect shutting down an entire point of view. That is not a difficult thing for them to do if they wish to do it.
Yeah, that's true. I mean, you have a tendency of getting isolated into your little corner, right? I mean, if you just, and if you doubt that, anyone watching this, go and like watch the trending section on YouTube and you'll be utterly floored at what's out there and what's popular.
But it's not going to make this movement go away.
Of course
that's
not.
That's just
it. And it doesn't mean that we haven't made advances. I mean, I get your point, Jared, but I still think that the reason why they're doing it is because our ideas have appealed to a lot of people, a lot of normies.
Of course, whenever the SPLC talks about me, I love it when they call me dangerous.
To God, you.
Why are we dangerous?
To yes, them,
why are we
are.
Dangerous? Yeah. We're dangerous because we're convincing. Yeah. Nobody says Maoists are dangerous. Nobody says Stalinists are dangerous. Ours is really the only ideological current out there that is receiving this kind of treatment. And it is, in a certain way, a tribute to the power of our ideas.
Yeah.
I mean, you know, of course, we are right. And that's why whenever we're in a debate with someone who disagrees with us, it's so easy to win because we're right.
Yeah, if they weren't good arguments, they wouldn't fear it. They would just let it
be. This is why you don't see them coming after people like Antifa and these other groups, because they realize they're not a threat to the current social order and to this, I guess you could say, new world order. That's why they let them do what they want, because they realize that the people they're fighting against, which tends to be us, are the ones that really have the power or that really have the ability to enact change.
That's right.
And when somebody like Antifa says certain thoughts are the equivalent of violence, and so it justifies violence to shut up the expression of these thoughts, very, very few people are even going to take that seriously. That's not a dangerous idea. That's a preposterous idea. Unlike our ideas, which are far from preposterous, they're persuasive, and they fly right in the face of the basics of the foundation of current orthodoxy.
Let's speak about that for a moment. That's interesting that you mentioned this idea that they think that they're doing something which is good here, right? They believe, I mean, to a certain extent, I think that they legitimize their position and their actions by saying, well, we're preventing them from committing violence, or you know, their ideas at the end of the day will lead to violence. So their measures are to adopt violence to stop violence, but that definition, or by that logic, they've already crossed the boundary which they initially attacked us for, right? But that this reflection doesn't seem to be in the picture.
They don't have any principles. They're leftists, you know. They play dirty. They cross all the lines. They don't care about double standards.
Well, and we can see just by the level of energy they put into fighting us that it's more than just about winning the argument, right? They don't want to just win the debate and go home. They want to, as you were saying earlier, they want to shut you off economically. They want to shut you off socially. They want to ruin everyone who comes out and talks about these ideas. That's why these companies, they'll come out and ban people from PayPal. They'll ban you from, I was banned from Uber for doing literally nothing. You know, they want to make you quarantined, not just your videos quarantined. They want to quarantine you from the rest of society so you exactly. cannot interact with the rest of society yep. or transact with the rest of society. It's very interesting to note that if American Express were banning leftist political dissidents, or if Discover or MasterCard were shutting off access to Black Lives Matter organizers, we would have a clear civil rights case in this country. But when, or civil rights crisis, I should say, but when PayPal or Stripe or these other online payment processors restrict access to right-wing political dissidents, it seems like that's just what you get for being a Nazi in America. It's a very strange dichotomy we have here.
You mentioned earlier that political views are not grounds for discrimination under the 64 Act. And right. so you could theoretically have a group that banned people who expressed support for the BLM ideas, so long as you are not discriminating on the basis of race. People mm-hmm. would just scream blue murder about that. But I don't think that you could force people to accept as business customers people who express a certain political opinion if that was really the objective grounds for keeping them out.
Mm. Well, James, your point there, where you mentioned that this is eventually also going to extend out further, I find that very interesting. And this is, to a certain extent, a side issue, but we can just talk about the power that Google has at this point in time and how much influence they have on things and how much they control when it comes to the information flow. I mean, here's one article, which is, you know, it's creepy and it's kind of weird, but this is what we're looking at now, where Google is basically planning cities and stuff like that, right? They're starting with neighborhoods, but my point is that Google is going to get to a point where they, you know, they control self-driving cars, they control artificial intelligence that runs certain functions or services in cities and stuff like that. And I think you're right when you say that they wish to get to a point where they control so many different things that basically in the future, with a flip of a switch, if you have the wrong opinions, you will be frozen out of these services that they're going to offering, right? It's kind of a, they're designing our behavior. I know that this is kind of a little panopticon thing, but I think it's a valid point that Google is putting itself in a position of immense power. And I think it's important that we fight back against this and make people aware of the fact that, you know, they are building an infrastructure now, which everyone is going to suffer under at the end of the day. And even if you agree with, you know, at the current time of things, that us evil haters and right-wingers are censored, what is going to prevent them from chipping away at the left and a little bit more on the right and a little bit more on the left? And eventually you'll have some extreme centrist, you know, completely narrow opinionated human beings. And to a certain extent, it has been designed into existence. I don't know, is this going too far, guys?
Well, I think centrists are the most enlightened out of all political persuasions. So it would make sense that after this kind of apocalyptic scenario, that they would be the ones that would kind of inherit the world, so to speak. But
hey guys, sorry about that. I don't know what happened. Right as we're talking about censorship, my internet connection cuts out. I don't know what's going on. I'm not trying to suggest a conspiracy, but I'm back now. Sorry about that.
Well, basically, you're kind of alluding to the dystopian sci-fi future that might await us, right? With the thought policing and technology overlords. And I mean, was there going to be robots patrolling the streets? You know, you said something racist, $500 fine. I mean, who knows? They'll cut you off from banking. They have smart grid systems in your home. They'll cut off your air, your water. I mean, who knows how far this can go.
This is the scary thing. We've seen all these memes about, there were some great memes on Twitter where people, it's like a picture of a guy trying to open a refrigerator and it says, oh, sorry, sir, hate speech was detected earlier today.
Yeah,
you've been cut off from refrigerator
access. That's right.
And the scary thing is we've always, you know, when I was growing up, I'd watch movies about government censorship. I read 1984 when I was really young, and I was always afraid of government censorship. But what you realize when you consider issues like these is that the government doesn't need to step in and do the censoring if the private corporations will do it for them.
That's right.
And this is exactly like Jared was saying earlier. I think it's more dangerous that it's coming from private corporations because there is no codified legal recourse at this point. There's literally nothing we can do legally in many of these cases.
Yeah.
Also, there's no obvious enemy. When you had a commissar in a peaked hat with a red star on it sitting there in the television studio telling the newsreaders what they could say and what they couldn't say, or having a little censorship bureau in the offices of the newspapers, then you knew. It was very clear. And people made a point of not trusting anything and looking for alternative news sources. Right. But when every man is his own commissar, every single institution doesn't even have to get direction from any central organization. They all know, because they all know what's acceptable and what's not. It's really quite terrifying. Yeah, now, I was struck by, James's point about you could get to the point where the self-driving cars will not come pick you up because you're a bad guy.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
That is a logical extension of what happened to me. In our case, American Renaissance, we were cut off from PayPal, so we couldn't do online transactions. I personally was cut off from PayPal. I protested this, and they gave me the usual list of things you're not supposed to do. You know, you're not supposed to buy and sell Nazi memorabilia if you live in France or Germany. You're not supposed to buy and sell illegal drugs or use PayPal for all these various list of reasons. I said, I haven't done any of those things, not one of those things. Yeah. And please explain to me why you cut me off. Well, you know, we can't explain. But that is, once again, my personal, nothing institutional about that at all. I just bought and sold things on eBay, that kind of thing that anyone would ordinarily do with PayPal. But the extension, of course, is, well, you can be cut off from telephone service. Or as you were saying, Lana was saying earlier, your water supply gets cut off. The air is the atmosphere is no longer made available to you if you're a bad guy.
Yeah, there's no end to where this will go.
Absolutely. There is no end to it. And especially when all of these private companies control things that are so useful to us. Now, the only option that I see that in which we could have any real recourse would be if these private companies become considered utilities. Now, the phone company is not able to say, okay, you're a hate monger, no phone service for you. The gas company, we're going to get gas either way. But so long as private companies have the freedom to discriminate, and as sort of a general sympathetic to libertarian sort of freedom guy as I am, so long as that attitude is in place, then these people can kick us around as much as they want.
But then when I see when people create alternative systems, they're even going after those already and shutting them down, other platforms. They just don't want them having any platform anywhere.
That's exactly right. That's exactly right. So, yes, once you have this kind of control and power, as others have pointed out, people relish their ability to exercise power of this kind, and they're going to promote their own agendas.
And this is the Big Brother system, as you talked about. I mean, this is it. This is how it's being unrolled. This is how it's being unfurled. This is the corporate panopticon. This is the system that sees everything, watches everything. And again, these giants such as Google, I mean, they've put themselves in a position where they control so much information. They know so much. It's this surveillance aspect, right? That maybe 50 years from now, there's an artificial intelligence running. They can find things about you from 30 years ago. You once said this. We're going to put you in the thought gulag. You know, it's like, who knows?
Big Brother is a leftist, after all.
And not to sound like Alex Jones here, but it really is scary when you see all these stories coming out about the exploits in your cell phone microphone to, you know, that people can record what you're saying, but it's really not that big of a deal because it doesn't happen. Or the Amazon Alexa, and these are the technologies that people buy willingly and bring them into their home, these microphones that run, as proven in court, they run all the time. They're definitely recording everything that goes on in your home.
Yeah.
It seems like we are hurtling towards this kind of late stage capitalism where people just accept a complete lack of privacy and accept complete control from this, like you said, this corporate technocracy. Now, of course, that's all voluntary. Yeah. Those are all voluntary transactions. But I think that is ultimately bad for the human spirit, you could say.
But these are this is dangerous private businesses, though.
Definitely, you had a good point about late stage capitalism. There, James. I hope there aren't any libertarians in the call here for what I'm about to say, but the only solution to these problems that we're facing is to go full Stalinist and nationalize everything.
That's just it. Yeah, exactly. It's a good idea.
I don't really believe that, but I mean, I think there are many ways that we can improve what's going on right now. I think nationalizing certain things like Twitter or YouTube could be good in the short term, but we have to ask ourselves why this is happening in the first place. And I mean, it's quite obvious and apparent to everyone in the call, of course, but it's because left-wing ideas, Marxist ideas, whatever, have become hegemonic. I'm sure there has been some degree of cooperation between you know, these titans of industry within the tech, you know, tech companies and so forth. Maybe after Charlottesville, some of them did, you know, make some phone calls and agree to start shutting down right wing, you know, use of their services and so forth. But I think the bigger issue is that left wing ideas are hegemonic. So these people don't even need to make these calls. The people that are occupying these positions of power have gone through university systems that churn out social justice warriors. So while we could, you know, perhaps nationalize some of these things, it would just be a matter of time if we don't change the culture until the people in the government would, you know, be completely SJW as well.
Yeah, they think that this is a good point. They think the same. It's the same people. And even if we did manage to get, you know, if it wasn't the government doing it, it would be the private corporations. If it wasn't the private corporations, it would be the government. And in this sense, I think we're looking at a two-pronged situation. Both of them would do it. But I think what we need to hammer is this issue also that the left always saw themselves as dissidents in the good old days, right? When they were not in control of everything. But now... Yeah, now, I mean, they're perfectly fine silencing any kind of this. It was never about free speech. This is the thing, right? What we saw in Berkeley.
They used it to destroy it. That's it. Use free speech to destroy free speech.
That's it. Yep.
Yeah.
Well, the whole idea that we're some sort of haven of liberty of expression is just such a preposterous myth. I was just talking to a group of Japanese reporters who were interested in finding about the Aruto Raito, as they call it. And they had been down to Florida to hear Richard Spencer attempt to give a talk. And they were struck by the fact that there was really no receptivity to what he had to say at all. I said, yeah, is this the first time you've become aware of this? No, this is a practically universal phenomenon. The idea that we can freely say and expect to be listened to, that's just a complete myth. And I would point out that this is not as new as some of you think. In 1970, when I was a college student, Arthur Jensen came to the campus. He was supposed to come to the campus and give a talk. This was the year after the famous Harvard Education Review article about race and IQ. And there was such a furor, such an uprising against the idea of having this wicked racist talk on campus, that his talk was shut down. This is in 1970. This has been going on for a long, long time.
Yeah. Yep. That's just it. The it's about the opinions. It's about the unacceptable levels of them. So what do we? There's more to say here about what's happening, of course, and we can get into that. But let's for a moment just dwell on the issue of okay. So what do we do then? How do we fight back against this? What can we reasonably do? Lana, you talked about, you know, maybe it would be better if we do get a legal kind of precedent set that what is hate speech, for example, right? Try to get the definitions down. And then maybe there's a legal precedence to does this person violate them, you know, that precedence or not, you know, what's the next step? But in terms of the private companies, I mean, just because they're private, does that leave the First Amendment completely out of the picture? Is there no legal issue that can be sought? The fact that they're violating as a private company in the United States, operating in the United States, but they're violating the First Amendment. What do you know about that, guys?
Robbie, the problem is the First Amendment only applies to government censorship. The First Amendment does not give you a right to freely express yourself in a private establishment. And this is maybe obnoxiously libertarian for some people in the audience, but unfortunately it is the truth. And it is important to remember that this benefits us as well. You know, this is the same legal theory that allows a business to say, hey, you cannot protest inside my business. You don't have a right to free speech in my business. The same principle then is applicable to the internet. So I don't know if trying to go down that route is the best way to do it. We can look at what the Supreme Court has already found about hate speech, which is that hate speech is not a legally defined term, and there's really no legal definition for hate speech, and that hates what may be colloquially referred to as hate speech is protected free speech under the First Amendment. There's something we could look at there. The path that I look down as being probably the best option, and you guys can, of course, correct me if you don't think this is advisable, but it's twofold. One, it is making it so that the corporations are considered utilities, that these the internet, YouTube, Google, these other Twitter, Facebook, for example, are all considered utilities, because as Jared mentioned earlier, that will limit the amount of censorship they can apply. That would really then restrict them to only banning things that are malicious or or, you know, criminal in nature, etc. Now, that's one of the things, one of the options. The second option would then be, and you could do these in conjunction, of course, getting political ideology considered under the 1964 or 1965 Civil Rights Act. Personally, I don't think the Civil Rights Act should even be in place. I think that it restricts unfairly the First Amendment free association. But if we're going to have these limits and if we're going to have these restrictions, we might as well use them to our advantage. You know, we can complain and long for a day where free association, as enshrined in the First Amendment, is truly protected and there are no civil rights restrictions like that. But until that day comes, I think we should be using these acts to our advantage and banning corporations from discriminating based on ideology.
Yeah, and that has to be set, right? That has that court session has to
that's
be had.
That's a big one. That's a big one.
Yeah.
The other thing is finding new ways to reach people outside of YouTube, which is also very challenging. I mean, I talk to a lot of normies. I try and engage with them when I'm out and about. Most people have no idea what the hell YouTube's doing or censorship. It just goes way over their head. They don't even hang out on YouTube. I mean, there's a lot of people that also aren't on YouTube.
But it's the, I mean, again, it is where the biggest audience is when it comes to a video platform, right? So that's why people are on there. This is the very idea that that's why the idea of creating your own platform is kind of a no starter. It's a failure to begin with because you would just isolate it to the choir, so to speak. The upside with YouTube is you could reach those people that were tangentially interested in certain
through
subjects.
Recommended.
Yeah, and it comes up as recommended.
Which they've stopped doing with us.
We had a tremendous amount of traffic coming in through that way, right? And now they've stopped that. In other words, they're closing, they're tightening the news, and they're making sure that no new people can kind of come into that circle, if you will, which is insidious.
It's shadow banning is what they're doing. So if you've never been to Red Eyes' channel, you won't see them come up recommended anymore. Because what happens is people go down their little rabbit hole of truth, you know? They see one thing they're interested in and all five more of these recommended videos, and then they find out about all our websites.
That was so wonderful about the concept, right? That was the heyday of the golden age of YouTube. You can literally go down the rabbit hole, as you say, and you can find an amazing amount of material.
Well, I looked at my screen. You know. I saw tons of these articles coming out. What happens when your, you know, kid secretly likes the alt-right? Oh, no. You know, I saw my kid looking at these videos and they came up recommended. I mean, that's the hysteria out there about it because it's working. Yeah. These kids are junking out on it. They love it, you know?
Well, I'd like to go back to the two proposals that James made earlier. One, to consider these enormous corporations as utilities. I think that's a much, much more promising course of action than permitting government to say you cannot discriminate on this basis and this basis and this basis. If you add political orientation or political expression to the legitimate grounds for non-discrimination, then that opens up all sorts of possibilities. It gives government yet more power, which I don't like, and that could be used against us as well as for us. I think the idea of making these enormous companies, treating them as utilities and basically permitting them to ban things that are already clearly libelous or defamatory or spectacularly obscene, letting them only control to the extent they wish to control only that, and then everything else goes. I think there is a certain promising possibility that we could go in that direction, and that would be extremely good for us. As people have pointed out earlier, the phone company can't say, we don't like the cut of your jib, and so go away. And likewise, gas and water and things like that. That's the way, unfortunately, these big companies should be treated.
Mm-hmm.
Not to go all survivalist here for a moment, but that's another reason why a lot of people like us are starting to think almost like preppers a little bit, you know? You have to have your house paid off. You have to have your bills so they're very low so that you can sustain yourself and take care of yourself. Because ultimately, they are going to come at us hardcore, you know? You have to be able to take care of your family and survive and be able to take care of yourself and be as self-sustaining as possible for long-term future.
That is another issue here, right, where the apocalypse led to basically people's income being slashed in half. There must be a legal recourse that some of them at least wanted to seek against YouTube in that measure, where they basically say, oh, because of this and this and this, you know, they're cutting it off. Jared?
Well, see, again, I tend to be somewhat libertarian on these questions. If I don't want to do business with somebody, for whatever reason. It's too bad if I'm paying somebody, I decide I don't want to pay him, but I don't like his services anymore, and his income is cut in half. I don't want the federal government or any level of government saying, wait a minute, you must continue to do business with this guy. What we have here is a situation in which we have de facto monopolies. If there were many varieties of YouTube and many different ways to get your message out equally effectively, then YouTube could not behave that way. Everybody would just go elsewhere. We don't have that situation. We have what is called a complete market distortion. We don't have alternatives to this. And that's why, and I know that there have been a number of suits brought, at least I think they're in the early stages now, in which people are going after YouTube on that basis, that this is basically a monopoly and that they have to be treated as a monopoly and have to behave like regulated monopolies.
Right, some antitrust laws or whatever they call it. And the other option, that's of course, right, is to replace CEO of YouTube, Susan Wojcicki, I think the name is, with someone like Jared Taylor.
We got to get the right people in there. She sent you an award, though, right? Henrik.
What's that?
She sent you an award, though.
We have the award. That's right. They said this cannot
if she only
be,
knew.
Well, it says in the letter, you know, when you reach, what is it, 100,000 or something, this can never be taken away from you. It's like, we'll see about that. You know? But guys, so, I mean, that's another issue here, right, of having the right people in these companies then that can make the decision, not just pink-haired SJWs that are sitting there flicking the switch just because they happen to dislike what you do politically.
You have to convert people who run these companies, who are shareholders. I mean, you have to hit it on that level as well. So how do we reach those people?
I think that's the bigger picture is the culture war. And that's where, you know, the alt-right and other, you know, similar parts of the internet and so forth come in, because we don't want to just get these things turned into utilities and regulated as such, right? We have a far greater vision for the world, a holistic overhaul of society. And all of the stuff that we're talking about right now is clearly important to that, but it is but a part of the whole, essentially. We don't want universities turning out people who are going to still have that desire to censor people for discussing scientific research on IQ.
Right.
Yes, yep. Of course.
But obviously that is kind of like a much harder thing to, just win the culture war. Like, right.
So it's
like
a long-term goal, yeah. Right? What we're talking about here today is kind of a short term.
We're in for the long haul on that one.
I agree with
you
there.
As far as specific policies, I think James's first proposal is the most, is the most likely and would be the most effective.
Yeah. Yeah.
Does someone have a cat that's purring?
No, it's something with a mic, I think, or something.
This just sounded like a purring cat.
We have to remember also that free speech is more than just what is codified in the First Amendment. Free speech is a cultural phenomenon, and it is a cultural phenomenon that is really inherent to most Western countries Western culture.
Yeah.
And we should should look back to the Romans and the Greeks and the spirit of free inquiry that was really one of the founding principles of the university system. This idea that we can have an open discussion, an open dialogue and debate about these things that we research and that we study. And, you know, if you disagree with my research on race and IQ, then, you know, provide research that counteracts that or that disproves, mm-hmm. that proves me wrong. Prove me wrong. Don't stop the conversation.
Yeah, and we either have it or we don't. You can't have just a little bit of free speech some of the time on some topics, right? You either have it or you don't.
Yeah.
As simple as that.
Even more dangerous if we live in a culture where people have to fear that, man, you know, if I come out and say I agree with Jared Taylor about, you know, this or that issue, or if somebody sees me with Mr. Taylor's book at my house, you know, man, I'm going to lose my job, lose my family, lose my friends. You know, there's really nothing we can legally do about that. But that is such a damaging place we would be in culturally if that were to be the prevailing narrative. And that kind of is at this point.
Yeah, that's true.
That is, in effect, the prevailing narrative. Mm. There are certain opinions that justify you being kicked out of legitimate society. I think the most astonishing and disturbing expression of this was after the events in Charlottesville, when Marco Rubio, a sitting U.S. senator, said that the attacks against the alt-right, they are in effect justified. These are ideas that provoke and justify violence.
Yes, the violent attacks.
Yep.
Yes. Here's a guy who is saying there are certain opinions that are so vile that they justify violence. Now, to me, this should have been an enormous international sensation that you have an American senator saying this. But this was passed. This was passed over basically without it, just hardly caused a ripple at all. But that
That's
is
interesting.
A reflection of, I think, a fundamental view that many, many Americans have.
And this is a very important point, Jared, because it's this also. It's an incredibly dangerous situation where you have a rising opposition to groups like the alt-right, for example, where they legitimize not only the dehumanization and the violence, but I mean, this is literally what they claim that the people they're fighting are doing, right? I mean, they're
Nazi book burning.
They're not interested in actually knowing the truth or knowing the nuances of what you think. I mean, it's an immense lumping together, you know, what they consider to be some of the worst people out there, right? That they don't see those nuances. And as you said, Lana, if you don't publicly decry these people outwardly, then you're part of the problem.
Yeah, you're
right?
an enabler, and
they see it legitimate to attack you with violence, and that's what you said, Jared. That you know you have people out there now saying that.
I'm going to have to get off in a little while, but I would like to quote a Brookings Institution study that was released earlier this year, which they found that 51% of all college students said shouting down speakers to silence them in a public forum is acceptable if they are deemed to be hate mongers. 51%, that's more than half, think it's okay to shout people down. And 19% of students support violence as a means of shutting down speech that they think is unacceptable. These, to me, are terrifying figures. These are the future leaders of the United States. It just goes to show you the kind of obscurantist and almost medieval mentality that prevails in universities today.
Yeah, these are the kids that will grow up and would love to build gas chambers and gulags and put people like us in it and say, it was great. Yeah. It was a good thing.
They're saving the world. This is it. I mean, if we do get into kind of a philosophical debate here a little bit, I mean, it is something to be said that, like, we've reached a point where people are no longer interested in actually communicating and talking and hearing each other's points out. Everyone has decided, and they're going violently after people. If you're on their side, they come after you with bats and everything they can. And it's dangerous, I think.
Yeah.
Anyway, Jared, if you do need to jump off, we'll probably continue just a few minutes here past the hour. Okay. But just tell us about American Renaissance. If there's any newcomer out there, I'm sure most are familiar with it. But just give us the skinny on that, if you will, quickly here, Jared.
Well, American Renaissance is a website that has been promoting race realism and white advocacy for quite some time now. And it's at amren.com. And I welcome all of your viewers to come check us out. And so thank you very much for having me on. And my congratulations and my perpetual congratulations to Red Ice for all of your wonderful efforts. Thanks very much.
Thank you, Jared. Have a good night. Gentlemen, I guess we could close this off while Jared gets off the call. But James, what else would you say if there's anything in terms of the proposals or anything like that you have in mind? I mean, is there anything else that you see could be done at this stage? If we just talk about like stopping YouTube, I think that an important point is also to be vocal and fight back and let people know that this is happening. And the more attention we can bring to it, the more kind of we can point them to be hypocrites, and hopefully more people will hear us out. I mean, the fact that Julian Assange, tweeted about Jared's video, that's kind of a success in itself. I mean, it helps to show which perspective it is, if you will, that is unacceptable. But what do you think, James?
Well, I think there's a lot of truth to that. At the same time, this is almost like a sort of death march, right? Where they'll pick us off one by one. And it is, you know, to use a Pepe metaphor here, if you just throw the frog in the hot water, it'll jump right back out. But if you slowly turn up the heat and you boil them, then they won't notice what's going on. And that's really what's going on here. They started with Jared and the Amren video, the New Century Foundation video. They're moving on to more and more content. A video of mine was similarly quarantined, not to the same extent of Jared's, obviously, but I did a video about DeAndre Harris, this violent thug who was in Charlottesville that beat up an old white man who was there. I did a video about that. Included no violence, included no advocacy of violence, nothing hateful, just showing the video of him doing what he did. And that was blocked from being shared. That could no longer be shared through the YouTube app, or the link wouldn't work. And people were reporting this. So I think they are really trying to be discreet here. It's not working, obviously, because we're noticing it. But we need to be preparing, like Lana said earlier. We need to be thinking like preppers, and we need to be cross-posting. We need to be utilizing these other alternatives preparing for the possibility that our connection is shut off tomorrow, that our channel is just blocked out tomorrow, which is something that could definitely happen to your channel, to my channel. Any one of our channels could be shut off, just like that, very easily. They could do that. So there are alternatives out there. There are things like PewTube, which is actually being developed by a friend of mine. There are things like BitChute. There are these other alternatives. But again, nothing is as big as YouTube. There are billions of daily users of YouTube.
Yep.
So, people, I hear people saying, oh, leave YouTube and go to Minds.com. It's like, okay, would you rather post to the, 3 million on the 3 billion on YouTube, or the 10,000 on Minds.com? Like, where is your message going to have the most traction?
How many of the billions on YouTube are Indians and Chinese?
Probably quite a bit, but I mean, it is just, yeah. I mean, just if you look at the numbers, it is the biggest video platform. I think Dailymotion, I mean, they're still far after, but Dailymotion had something around 60 million views, give or take, per day or something. It looks like it's the second one. I don't know if that's an option. What about the other, like VidMe and all? It also turns into, guys, where you have to be like on 10 platforms and just uploading them to all these platforms takes, it steals all your time.
It would be easier just to be a leftist and call for white genocide and get promoted on the front page.
Yeah, exactly. That's an idea. There you go. Now you're talking.
Well, we also, I think, have to find kind of new and creative ways, step it up to deliver our message in kind of covert, sneaky, good ways. I mean, it's kind of hard for us to be sneaky anymore at this point, but other people up and coming, and also find ways to promote outside of YouTube. I mean, we have to reach more people somehow. Because like I said, I talk to normies a lot. I engage a lot. They have no idea what the hell is going on out there.
And many are fairly sensible too. They're not radical leftists.
When I talk to a lot of these young girls, I'm always picking their brain. They all want to be married. They all want to have kids. They all want to find a guy who can take care of them. I mean, they're not radical feminists, And these are girls in the university town.
Yeah.
So, I mean,
and it's a small faction. Yeah. And that's just it. It's a small faction that is very loud.
Very loud. So you think it's just all these people,
Yeah. But they have reached the CEOs of YouTube. They have reached the Google people. They have reached, I mean, we know, guys, the state of Germany was working together with Facebook, as a Facebook, Zuckerberg, Facebook, to basically make sure that, if anyone violated those terms, they could be fined. I think Facebook could be fined up to, was it 55 million
something
euros
insane,
or something?
Yeah.
It's ridiculous.
I don't even know how that's possible.
So it's Facebook, guys. It's Twitter. It's Google. It's YouTube. It's, all these other, Cloudflare. It's all these other services, and this is something which probably is going to spread like a virus, and that's why it's important to push back now before it's too late. And I think, again, we need to have an equal campaign where we are loud back and push back and spread the awareness of what it is that's happening and the double standards of what they have, right?
Yeah. It's a big job, but it's got to be done.
And I mean, Mark Zuckerberg, Sheryl Sandberg, look, we know what's going on here, right? We all see what's going on. But the encouraging thing, and I guess the white pill in all of this for me, is that when you look at the type of political discourse that takes place on someplace like Facebook, where your real name is attached, your real identity, your employer, all your family, everything is attached to it, you see a lot more sanitized political discourse. You see the left tends to win on places like Facebook. But then you go on YouTube, where everyone is using an avatar, everyone's using a fake name, everyone's using, a Pepe as a picture or whatever. And the right wing tends to dominate on places like YouTube, where there is that shield of anonymity and where people can go and express how they really feel about things. And so you'll go to a pro-refugee video on Facebook, and you'll see that the top comments are all, oh, we love refugees. Refugees are so great. Refugees are beautiful. But then you go to a pro-refugee video on YouTube, and the top comment, if it hasn't been deleted, will inevitably be something like, build a cannon and send them all back.
It's true.
Yeah. And we see that. And so I think that is very encouraging. And that's why these people are scared. That's why these people are literally shaking in their boots, so to speak.
Yeah,
because they realize that we win when it's anonymous. We win when people can really express how they feel.
That is correct. You know, there, some of their latest campaigns, I think it was like Every Girl Counts, one of the YouTube's latest campaigns, you know. And it was like, first of all, the videos hardly had any views at all, but it was all thumbs down, like feminism is cancer and, you know, the top comments and stuff like that. Yeah. So it's like, and it shows that because there's people on, you know, our side, if you will, they can have, you know, hundreds of thousands of views, tens of thousands of views, millions in some cases as well. So it shows the imbalance that they are... they're more willing to choose the downvoted stuff as the important, the things with no views, and promote that on the front page. And we saw that, of course, in the Project Veritas video coming out, where one of the guys from YouTube talked about the fact that there is a manual hand in there yanking things off the trending page, making sure that, you know, I think he directly referenced Alex Jones, for example, but we know that this extends to other people as well, on our side of the fence, if you will. So they are there, they're handpicking, they're cherry picking.
Tinkering, this is good. Stats,
yeah, yeah, we need to push SJWism, we need to push leftism, progressivism, and all this stuff. But behind all that, as you say, James, there's a tidal wave of people that see through these lies. They see that it's bullshit, they see that it's didactic political theater, and no one is liking it. And that's a good thing. I think we can work with that.
Mm-hmm. Well, yeah. And like Jared was mentioning earlier, and like you guys were mentioning earlier, the rabbit hole phenomenon where people just go on YouTube and they'll go and they'll watch a video and then they'll see, oh, this is, looks interesting over on the side and click on that. And then it progresses. And, you know, after a few hours, you're watching something, you know, completely different, but still in that same vein. That is one of the most effective ways that people can learn about new topics. Like for me, for example, I was going to mention this when Jared was on the call, but I watched his video with Stefan Molyneux back in 2015. The truth about race, I think it was called, on Stefan Molyneux's channel. And from there, that recommended me then to, you know, Jared Taylor's speeches at NPI or Amaran. And so you go and you watch these things and you learn a lot more. And that was very instrumental in my process of learning more about these kind of topics. And so if they shut that off, if they shut off that possible pathway for people, that is going to be a big problem. And that's going to be a big problem that we should be concerned about. And this is bigger than just, you know, the ad revenue and things like that. Back when the ad revenue thing was first happening, I was, you know, pretty triggered about that because that was how I was making most of my income. But after I realized that's the new reality, I started to diversify my income and do different things to make money. And now I'm fine. But, you know, if they can really stop the flow of information, that is bigger than all of this. That's bigger than the revenue. That's bigger than everything else. If they can stop the flow of information, we're in for a lot of trouble. And I'm starting to get a feeling that they're doing that. You know, my videos used to get on average anywhere from 70 to 100,000 views, you know, consistently posted. But over the past couple months, I've been posting videos and getting 25,000 views.
We see the same thing with us too.
Yeah. Yep.
And it's very suspicious because, you know, I'll still get that initial surge at the start, but then it'll immediately taper off and there won't be the same consistent flow.
And that's which probably that related audience, James. That's probably that like recommended. Yeah. I
exactly.
mean, yeah,
exactly right. Exactly.
Outside of that bubble, right? So again, they're isolating people in these small spheres, which is, again, another point we should challenge them on, that if they have mechanisms and algorithms in place just to expose people to the very ideas that they find sanitary and okay and everything like that, what's the point, right? I mean, they should be like aiding the dialogue, right? Making these different sides understand each other, have them listen to the other side of the argument, right? I don't know if these are points that could be argued, but you know, you see my point, right? It's like we could charge them on so many issues of how they're worsening the situation by isolating people, if you will, instead of actually making sure that people know what the hell is going on and making sure that they know how other people feel about
stuff. Yeah, I mean, and thought policing isn't going to suppress alternative views. It's going to do the exact opposite. It's going to generate more alternative views against them. That's what happens here.
Yeah, so that's the question, right? Are they crossing, are they gambling here? Are they doing something which is very dangerous to themselves? I mean, obviously, as we've said, so many high-profile YouTubers have come out in full force against YouTube. That can't be good for them. Now, when they're starting to do this kind of stuff, that's not good for them either.
But they're so big at the same time. They're such a huge machine, I think, that they're arrogant and think that they can just squash this whole movement. You know?
Maybe, yeah.
Right. And when you look at who has the money and who has the ability to spend on products, and they know this, and you guys have looked at your YouTube analytics and your demographics, like, you know, they collect very detailed demographics on people. So when they see that people like us are bringing in a disproportionately younger audience, we're bringing in a lot of people who are, you know, between the ages of 13 and 17, I think that's 20% of my audience. And then, you know, 17 to 35 is the other like 60%. You know, we're bringing in a lot of very young people who have less disposable income. That's just a simple economic truth. So YouTube is probably making a consideration, and this is one of the flaws of capitalism. And not to sound like a Marxist or anything, but this is one of the flaws of capitalism. YouTube, their primary objective theoretically is to make the most money possible for their shareholders and for their company's owners. And so, given that, they are going to be completely okay censoring content and shutting down content that may hurt their brand and may hurt the amount of advertisers that want to come in and spend money with them. And instead, they'll promote content that appeals to boomers. You know, they'll go and they'll push out the, you know, 10 funniest cats of 2017 video, which is just inane, you know, dumb bread and circus type entertainment, because that's going to get a older demographic watching it. It's very sanitary. It's not controversial. And every company in the world will want to advertise with that video because it's very safe. But, you know, a video talking about, you know, political issues or something more controversial, you know, if that's present on YouTube's site, advertisers may say, hey, you know, I don't want to spend money with YouTube because you guys enable X and Y behavior, and it lets social justice warriors go and do this whole campaign where they boycott advertisers. We've seen this before with Fox News and other places in the past. And so YouTube may be just making an economic calculation here, but I think it would be unwise to dismiss the possibility of other certain loyalties and motivating their decisions here, if you know mm-hmm. what I mean.
Yeah, good point. Well, gentlemen and lady, what else should we add to this? Is there something important that we've left out, which is kind of an important aspect in the equation for us to understand the situation, the seriousness of the situation, where it might go? I just encourage people out there to continue to brainstorm as well, obviously, and think about how we can fight back.
Yeah.
How do we push back against this? What are some of the campaigns that we can do to make sure that more people wake up to what they're doing? I think there is a lot of power, and I think you said that this in your censorship video, Lana, that there's a lot of power in letting people know that there's something that they're trying to keep from you,
yeah.
right? And that's something just from a psychological point of view that we have to work with. But you still have to get that out to people.
Yeah.
And that's the trick, right?
Exactly.
Yeah. But guys, anything else that we should add into it here?
Yeah, I want to add something. So obviously at the beginning, James said something about the slippery slope, which, as we all know, is very, very real. Incrementalism is how the left has been able to, you know, gradually change the culture, gradually stack victories that are, the differences between, you know, one step and the next aren't that big. But then if you look at everything the left has accomplished since the 60s, it's quite amazing, frankly. But I just want everyone watching this to imagine what it would be like trying to exist in society if you couldn't get a bank account, if you couldn't use social media, if you had trouble, say, even getting a cell phone. Because these are all realities that we could face as political dissidents.
That's correct.
Yeah. Lana did mention the bank account thing. Just, I think that was presented as an example of, oh, imagine what it would be like, kind of what I just said. But I do know people within the alt-right, granted they are, high-profile people within the movement, who have had their bank accounts removed. Now, that is quite frightening. That is another thing that should be regulated as a utility.
Definitely. Yeah, definitely.
Because that's clearly more important than, you know, social media, than YouTube, just being able to,
of course,
because you can't do anything really in society unless you want to live in like a hut somewhere without a bank account. So we're kind of we are pioneers, essentially. This is all uncharted territory, because this is essentially the result of technological innovation and progression. And one thing that Ted Kaczynski, obviously the Unabomber, wrote in his manifesto is that technology quite often has unexpected results. So no one really, maybe people predicted this, and I'm going to be proven wrong in the comments or something, but I don't think people really predicted all of these things happening, 20, 30 years ago, and obviously beforehand. So again, we are pioneers. This is uncharted territory, and it's essentially up to us to raise, you know, sound the alarm and determine whether or not there is going to be essentially private third-party totalitarianism for the foreseeable future.
Right.
Yeah, and I think part of the reason nobody would have predicted it is because if these companies were acting like rational capitalist actors, like you would expect them to, you would expect them to want to have a biggest client base as possible.
Yeah, and just for money.
Exactly.
Right.
Yeah.
Right. Because that is really the way to maximize their profits. But because of external social pressures, things like the possibility of a boycott due to political orientations, things like the threat of this ICANN, this UN agency that controls all the domains in the world and all the domain registrars, because of these external threats that modify the base realities and the base motivations in a capitalist system, that's why this is so new and that's why this is so different and that's why this is unexpected. We would never expect private companies to engage in censorship like this because it acts against their inherent self-interest as a capitalist corporation, as an entity. But because of these other pressures, that's why they're doing it. So yeah, you're right. I don't think anybody did predict this. Nobody would expect this level of collusion. It was, you know, simply unimaginable. There was no reason for these things to happen. But as we're seeing now, you know, never underestimate the power and the cultural power of the left.
Yeah, and watch out where this is going in the future. As I said, I mean, I've kind of gone for the, you know, the dystopian view here of the future. But I mean, I really think that if we don't stop it, that is what's coming. We talked earlier on about this, like, you know, they literally will invent like these Terminator robots, but they will like have the mind of a social justice warrior. You know, they will like police you on your language and like break your bones if you don't. I mean, anything is possible here, really. And it's going to be this very dismissive system, if you will, that's in place, that if you do cross the boundaries of that very narrow corridor of what they have set to be acceptable behavior, acceptable thoughts, there's a number of things that can happen to you. They might not directly harm you violently, but the consequences of what they do will, right? So you could be homeless. You could not be able to, you know, as you said, Reinhardt, buy, you know, get a bank account, etc. You cannot go and buy food. You're locked out.
Can't rent a place. Everything is cashless,
yeah. Right? The same thing there. And then right now they're doing this. They're building all these profiles. They're collecting all this data. They have these massive data centers that Google is utilizing, and they will collect this stuff on you. So it's a real, I just want people, you know, watching this to keep this in mind, that that system, that, you know, technotronic, as Brzezinski called it, that system, right? That panopticon, that's being built right now, and it's being done by people with this SJW mindset, you know. And it's terrifying to think of the consequences.
Yeah. So yeah, we're being oppressed by blue-haired lesbians and male feminists. It's a very unfortunate.
And they're
reality.
Protected by armies, right?
Yeah, they have armies, right, and the police, right, behind them. Yeah. Ultimately, that's what I'm saying. And eventually, they'll have.
When
these,
are
like,
those guys going to snap out of it? Or the guys, you know, building these robots, the white nerds? When are they going to rebel here? You know. Yeah.
They're all SJWs too, except for maybe the occasional neo-reactionary in there.
But. Well, and they're getting replaced by Pajit coming over to do their job for $12 an hour anyway. So
that is true. That is true. All right, guys. Well, very good. James, why don't you give us a little bit of some of the details of how people can check out some of your work. Of course, we have your Twitter up right here. You're doing a show as well. Give us the rundown on that, if you will.
Yes, we are, Nick Fuentes and myself, we are hosting the preeminent, you could say, American Nationalist podcast. It's called Nationalist Review. We do that now 2 times a week, Wednesday mornings and on Saturdays, where we host that. I host a live show called America First Overdrive every Tuesday and Thursday. Not doing it today, but every Tuesday and Thursday at 6 p.m. Pacific on the America First Media YouTube channel. And then, of course, I have my own private YouTube channel where I do videos and commentary and everything. And that is over, just search my name, James Alsop, and I have 165,000 or so subscribers there. So continuing to grow, continuing to expand, and hopefully making good moves there. I did a video today about what young American nationalists can do to change politics and to change the Republican Party and to co-opt the party. And so that's something I think is very important. So go check that out, as well as everything else.
Very, very good. Well, thank you guys and Ilana for joining us today. Really appreciate it. Let's do it again soon. We have, of course, lots more coming, but yeah, it was great having you here. I think these are important lessons. Of course, this debate, this battle, if you will absolutely continue. This is far from over. And I think we'll see the consequences of this really bloom in the next few months or so, and we can see where that's going. But, you know, if you are concerned about this stuff, take part in the fight, push back in whatever way you can. you have to be engaged. You have to share links. You have to manually, you know, help people like us out, like James, like Jared, and share the links, get them out to friends, family, etc. Make sure that they can't kind of quarantine and contain us in the way they are. And if there are specific videos that are, they should be spread even further to yeah. show and demonstrate what it is they're doing, what perspectives and what opinions they are afraid of. So it's a big battle. I mean, we're facing these, you know, leviathans, if you will, technologically speaking, and what they have at their disposal financially. But we have to do something. We have to push back. And I think this is a very, very important battlefront, if you will. There's a multi-front battle that's ongoing, but this is one of the more important ones right now. But if we can't get our ideas out, we don't really have anything at all. At this point, I think personally that the most important thing is to give people our perspective, share with them how we see things, how we deconstruct reality, why we think the way we do. And I think sensible people will agree with us on many points, frankly, if they truly knew what we were about. So you know, this is a very important aspect. But yeah, again, thank you everyone for joining us. We're going to sign off for now. We'll be back with more soon, of course. If you do enjoy what we do, you can help us out. You can donate to us. Let me just throw that up right there. For those of you who don't know, we, of course, were hacked a while back. We're still pulling everything together for the new members' website. They managed to destroy that utterly. So, again, financially removed an ability for us to continue to grow at the moment. So if you do like what we do, you can help us out at paypal.me/redeye. So thank you so much for your help. But yeah, that's it, guys and gals. We're round up for now. Have a good night, and we will see you guys soon. Take care.
Thanks.